Nation. It's time for the Falcons Report on Dukes and Bell.
Looking, shoots it for the end zone. Intercepted A.J. Terrell.
All the highlights and interviews you need from the Dirty Birds.
Fighting all the way through, finding a way to get that win is absolutely outstanding. What we love to do.
The best the Falcons have to offer right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
You shall not pass!
Dukes and Bell, Falcons Report on a Thursday, 2 weeks from today. Falcons open training camp in Flowery Branch, 3 weeks from today, first NFL preseason game of the year, Hall of Fame game. So football is upon us. Matter of fact, first NFL camps will be coming up next week. So, yeah, they'll be here, and let's go football, right? Because Spencer Strider pitching tonight, and baseball is what baseball is. All-Star Weekend coming up. That'll be a lot of fun. But after that, okay. So we got a lot to check in on here. John Fricke in for Dukes and Bell today alongside Oren and Day-Day. And we're keeping the fort down for the fellas. They'll be back on Monday here. Falcons training camp is coming. It is July 24th through the 13th of August. And we at Sports Radio 92.9 The Game are going to bring you exclusive on-site coverage of camp from the Morning Shift, Steakhouse, Andy and Randy, all broadcasting live from Flowery Branch. And when it all wraps up, Dukes and Bell are going to be at Hooters at the Mall of Georgia. And so, again, the show's up to Dukes and Bell will be live on site at Flowery, and then we'll have Dukes and Bell at the Hooters at the Mall of Georgia. Coverage brought to you by Rolex Real Mowers for the best grass in your neighborhood, and by Window Nation, windownation.com. Call 866-90-NATION. Live coverage of Falcons training camp starts July 24th, 2 weeks from today, right here on Sports Radio 99 The Game. And I know what the folks of the Morning Shift are going to go through, because Hugh and I were out there at O'Dark many a time. Oren, how many times were you and Hugh and I out there at the O'Dark? A lot.
Quite a few.
it's so weird because, you know, you roll in the O'Dark, nobody's there, and it's quiet, it's dark, and you don't think anything's happening, and then you get to watch the sunrise, and then the mowers come out, and then, you know, and finally when the show ends, right, Oren? Oh, that's when everything begins. So nothing actually happens during the morning shift. Just nothing, except, oh, now it's going. Okay, now it's going to pop off. Okay, I got you. I don't know that I want... I can't speak for Michael Penix Jr. He's going to speak for himself. The man's, you know, in his mid-20s. He's been around a little bit. He's not, you know, a 19- or 20-year-old young man. He's a middle-20s guy who played 5 years in college and now is a year of NFL underneath his belt. So he's been around this block enough to know. And he seems to be, by all accounts, you know, comfortable in his own skin and in charge of everything that he's going on. So I don't need Kirk Cousins to mentor him at all. This isn't that I need him to, and I don't want him to, frankly, given Cousins' propensity to lie. You know, when Michael Vick interviews him, I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. Now, that's a different spin. Now, Michael Vick's going to be busy this year as the new head coach at Norfolk State. But, you know, as a guy who was a quarterback for the Falcons and a left-handed quarterback for the Falcons, he might be able to impart some advice to Michael Penix. So the two hook up, and they start talking, and they do an interview. And Michael talks to Michael about number of things, including what Michael Penix thinks is a successful season and what that might look like for the Falcons.
Successful season for the Atlanta Falcons and Michael Penix.
The postseason. Oh, got to get in the postseason.
Seeing, like, the Dirty Bird Nest and, like, all the little highlights of the fans, it was like, man, like, they get rocking whenever we win it. So, like, definitely want to get back to that, you know, winning football games so we can have the city turn.
Yeah, well, let's put it this way. So Michael Penix Jr. plays 3 years at Indiana, and then he goes and plays 2 years at Washington. Then he comes and he plays a year here. The last time that Michael Penix, after 3 years in Indiana, 2 years at UW, and a year with the Atlanta Falcons, the last time the Falcons played a playoff game, Michael Penix Jr. was in high school, okay? So he's not wrong. I mean, I think the message is pretty clear. It's permeating down. Everybody understands on this team that it's playoffs or bust. Is that a good thing, Day-Day, that it's playoffs or bust? Oren, is that a good thing that they're in the mindset of they've got to achieve this goal in order to not only have a successful season, and by successful season, I mean also save the coach's job?
Well, yeah, that's what you want from your players. You want your players to have that type of mindset that they did not, you know, succeed if they don't reach the playoffs. That's what we're in this for. Now, granted, on the outside looking in, you may say, you know, well, this team may be this piece away. But as a franchise, no, when you get up there to Flowery Branch, you want the vibe of your players and your team to feel like a team that is confident they can reach the postseason.
Yeah, it's different. I mean, because, last year I think they went into it with Kirk Cousins thinking, hey, listen, we got a shot at this division. Tampa's owned the division, run the division, but, you know, we like our team. I think this year the difference is going to be, I think they walk into camp thinking, we're going to win this. We're the best team in the NFC South. Now, Vegas might not agree. Some of these pundits might not agree, which is just leaving me shaking my head. But I got to believe that the players believe they're the best team in the division. They beat Tampa twice last year. You know, they walked into Philadelphia's house and won a game. They went to Washington. They had Jaden Daniels beat if you make a field goal. So I think they think that, you know, if they can avoid. The biggest problem the Falcons have had, really, over the last few years is losing games, sort of like the Hawks would do. You know, the Hawks would go out and they beat Boston, they beat Cleveland, they beat New York twice, three times, and then they would lose to, like, the Wizards. You know, it was like, what the hell are you doing? And the Falcons did the same thing. You know, they would go out and beat big teams, and then they would lose the stupid games. And so quit losing the stupid games. You know, win the opener against Tampa, for example. And everybody likes – and I get a kick out of that, too. Everybody looks at the Falcons' schedule, guys, and they say, you know, the Falcons have a pretty difficult schedule if you look down. And I'm like, yeah, but those teams, they – Atlanta's on their schedule, too, guys. It's not like – it's – if you're a Washington Commanders fan Oh, and by the way, just to go over here for a second, I'll get back to that. But if you're a Commanders fan, you're not looking at Atlanta on the schedule and automatically saying win, are you? I would hope not. I wouldn't hope you would, because if you are, I got news for you. Did you guys, I know this has nothing to do, but it just popped in my head. Did you guys see that it's possible the Redskins could come back? The name? Not just the helmet, the name? Yeah.
I didn't see that.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, there's some chatter in Washington about bringing the name back. Forget about the helmet. Bringing the name back. That would be interesting. Anyway, I'm just telling you, there's some chatter about it. All right, so more from Vic and Penix in this interview here. Left-handed quarterbacks. I think if I'm not mistaken, isn't Ken Stabler the only, or somebody help me out here, is Ken Stabler the only left-handed quarterback in the Hall of Fame? He may be. Is there a left-handed quarterback? Is he in the Hall of Fame? Pardon me for not knowing this. I'm not a Hall of Fame guy. But there haven't been that many great left-handed quarterbacks in NFL history. You know, I mean, probably think of them off the top of your head. Steve Young. Steve Young's in the Hall of Fame. Okay, Steve Young. He's the best one. He and Ken Stabler. And then you drop down to, what, Jim Zorn, right? And, of course, Michael Vick, who, if things had worked out differently and had a longer career and all that, but that's a different story. Certainly a great, great player as a left-handed quarterback. Left-handed quarterbacks have it different than right-handed quarterbacks. It's not like pitching. It's an entirely different thing here. So he talked about left-handed quarterbacks, and this is, you know, what he had to say in regards to how coaches view these left-handed quarterbacks.
Being a left-handed quarterback, I always felt like sometimes my coaches would hold back a little bit. Being a lefty, you know, do you find the game being a little bit difficult, or do your coach, your offensive coordinator, give you free reins to just, you know, to be you?
Man, I get what you're saying. Like, to hold him back, he be trying.
Yeah.
You know, like, Coach called it. Like,
let it go.
He like, oh, we got to roll you out to the left. And I'm like, man, roll me out to the right. You do this, do that. Like, it don't matter, man. I can do it.
Yeah, because that's what I went through. I used to always tell my coaches, roll me out to the right, because sometimes going across your body, throwing across your body is really what, you know, it improves your accuracy. Yeah. So you be having that same
you know, thing. Conversation. I feel like I throw better rolling to the right.
No, it's interesting. Throwing better, rolling to the right. So there's so many things with left-handed quarterbacks, right, guys? Let's just tick down them. Number one, these are some of the minor ones to some of the major ones. Number one is receivers will tell you that you have to adjust. It's really important that they get with receivers because the ball spins counterclockwise. It spins in a different direction. I know it's a minor thing, but if you think about it, it's spinning the other way. And you spent your whole life catching 150,000 balls, primarily from guys where the ball is spinning the other way. I know it seems like a small thing, but suddenly when you put your hands on it and it's spinning in a different direction, you got to adjust to it. Now, another thing, of course, is the fact that the Falcons' blindside tackle shifts from Jake Matthews to Caleb McGarry. Now, how much pause does that give you? That's what I'm thinking. So this is where it's going to be, you know, Charlie Werner is going to have to be, you know, really important to this team because they may have to play Charlie there. The idea of rolling him to his right, that's most likely a spin move, right? Fake handoff, spin around, roll to your right here. If they can make that part of the arsenal, that really is that's probably the biggest thing they can do. Not only is it going to work on their accuracy, but if they can get Penix to do like the, you know, the play action, spin around, roll to his right to throw to his offhand, the defense has to adjust to that. And not only do they have to adjust to it, they have to stay kind of in their lane preset until the handoff takes place or the play action takes place to know which way he's going. You know, not is he going to be running into it, but yeah, you have to be more honest on the defense, on balancing it out, and not just overload your right side of the defense, expecting him to roll to his left. So there's a lot that's involved with it. The biggest thing, I think, guys, with Penix that I saw, and I'm wondering what you saw, Dede and Oren. Dede, what the biggest thing I saw with Penix as a quarterback last year that he had to work on more than anything else was he throws the ball so bloody hard that everything is coming at these guys much faster than what Kirk Cousins threw it, is that he's got to maybe just take a little bit, almost take a little off and work on the touch.
I didn't see it necessarily as a bad thing, but to your point, it did stand out. Like, he gets that thing out of there. I mean, and it, like you said, he rockets that thing to him. So, you know, I guess it really depends on, you know, how some of the receivers feel about that, catching that thing on the other end.
You know, it's interesting in a way if you think about it. One of the for all these advanced stats about exit velocities and, you know, he's the fastest runner, you know, in terms of miles per hour, one of the things we don't see much of is speed on throws. How fast the ball is being thrown. You see speed on pitches on every pitch, right? Did I miss that we're seeing speed on passes? Not that that matters.
No. We see them at the draft, but that's about it. Or the no, the draft, excuse me, the combine.
Right. We don't see them in a game. Which is it. But again, I think he needs to develop more of a touch, you know, kind of being able to, you know, throw the ball a little softer over the top, throw some of those passes, let a guy on a wheel route like Bijan run underneath the ball, for example, rather than try and force everything at 95 miles. I have no idea how fast he throws it, but he's got to be up there in the top. Am I wrong to think he's got a top three or four in terms of speed arm? I mean, he throws bullets, dude. Not that that's necessarily a bad thing or a good thing. It's neither. I mean, it was, for example, a really good thing he was throwing bullets in the game against Washington because there aren't many quarterbacks who can make that throw into the end zone on fourth down that Pitts caught. Because you got to zip that thing in. It's the only chance that has of being a touchdown.